The closest congressional race in America could be right here in Colorado, in the 8th District, stretching from the suburbs of Adams County up to Weld County. First-term Republican Congressman Gabe Evans is expected to have a tough time holding on to his seat. But first, Democratic primary voters must decide who they want to challenge Evans. Shannon Byrd, a centrist who left the state legislature to focus on this race, and current state representative Manny Rutina, a progressive. This is their only televised debate. This is Next Presents, the race for Congress.
I'm Kyle Clark, and let's welcome the Democratic candidates for Colorado's 8th Congressional District, former State Representative Shannon Byrd and current State Representative Manny Rutina. Thank you both for being here for tonight's televised debate. As with all of our 9 news debates, with the exception of that introduction, we do not refer to candidates using elected or educational titles. You, the voters at home, will determine whether either of these candidates becomes a U.S. representative. The candidates have agreed to a few ground rules in advance. 1-minute answers for most questions, except for when I note that it's a short answer or a yes or no question. There will be continued discussion and redirect at my discretion. There will be 1-minute closing statements, and the candidates will have at least one opportunity to ask one another questions. So let's get started. This primary debate is going to focus on where the two of you differ. But Democratic primary voters are also interested in how each of you will take the case to Republican Congressman Gabe Evans in November. So let's begin there. 60 seconds apiece. What is your pitch to general election voters on why Gabe Evans should be a one-term congressman? Ms. Byrd.
Yes. I'm thrilled to be here. First, thank you to 9 News for hosting this debate and Kyle for moderating. Gabe Evans and Donald Trump every day are taking votes, making decisions that are making it harder for families like the one I grew up in to have a fair shot at success. I was raised by my single mom and my grandmother. I grew up in a trailer park. We depended upon my grandmother's tip money to be able to keep a roof over our head, and I used that to become the first person in my family to go to college. And recognizing how hard people are working, just like my own family, when you have a representative like Gabe Evans voting to tear healthcare away from tens of thousands of people in this district, cheerleading, being a cheerleader for Donald Trump's tariffs, which have caused grocery prices, everything that we purchase to soar, it's making life harder for all of us. Instead of being a representative for people in the district, Gabe Evans' view of public service is whatever Donald Trump wants, Donald Trump gets. And the people in the 8th deserve better.
Ms. Byrd, thank you. Mr. Root, now, how will you make the case against Congressman Evans?
First off, thank you, Kyle, so much for having me here. Thanks to the audience for paying attention to this very important race. You know, this is very personal for me. I'm the son of a single mom who came to America in search of that American dream, and we worked hard every single day for this country. And I've been going to these in-person town halls across the district that Gabe Evans refuses to go to because he's scared of his own constituents. And when people hear about my personal story and all of our campaign's momentum, people have told me, you know, you must be Donald Trump's and Gabe Evans' worst nightmare. When it comes to Medicaid, I grew up on Medicaid. I filled out those food stamp and Medicaid forms starting at age 10. I know what the working people of this district are having to go through right now. And right now, Donald Trump and Gabe Evans have gutted Medicaid to the tune of $1 trillion to give tax breaks to their billionaire buddies. They're starting forever wars in Iran without any plans, raising gas prices, raising prices across the board. For me, this fight is deeply personal, and I will always fight for the working people of this district.
Mr. Rutinel, thank you. Colorado's 8th Congressional District could be one of the most competitive congressional races in America come November. For Democratic primary voters who just want to win, what is your message about why you are more electable than your opponent? Mr. Rutinel.
Yeah, well, I'm honored to be endorsed by the largest unions in the state who understand that I will always fight for working people. I'm endorsed by over 100 elected officials, including former U.S. Senator Ken Salazar. I've got the support of 1,000 volunteers that are knocking on doors, making phone calls, as well as the teachers' unions and so many groups. I'll also say that this is a Latino district. It was drawn for Latino representation, working class representation. I have the unique ability as the only Latino Democrat in this race to speak directly to people, not just in their culture, but in their language. I'll also add that a lot of swing voters across this district aren't paying attention to the news through the New York Times or NPR. They're getting their news on social media platforms like TikTok and Instagram and Facebook. I've been honored to have the support of hundreds of thousands of new followers, 8 million likes, 80 million organic views. We need someone that has the energy to bring folks together and the work ethic to get the job done.
Ms. Byrd, for Democratic primary voters primarily concerned with winning in November, why are you more electable than your opponent?
Yes. As you've correctly noted, Kyle, this is the most competitive congressional district in the entire country. And if we want to have a check on Donald Trump, it is a must-win seat. I am the only candidate in this primary who has ever won a contested election. And I haven't done it just once. I've done it five times. I have data for my last four legislative elections. And in a district, my House district, which is only about 29% registered Democrats, I have consistently won my elections with between 58 and 62% of the vote. I win elections by building the broadest coalition possible. And it's exactly the same kind of coalition of voters we're going to need to win back Colorado's 8th district. Beyond that, I am a representative and a candidate who has a track record of delivering real results, fully funding Colorado's public schools, creating true health insurance reform. These are projects and work I intend to bring with me to Congress. And at a time when people are distressed about government not delivering for them, I bring that skill set. It's why I was named the most effective lawmaker in the state of Colorado.
As Mr. Routinel noted a moment ago, Colorado's 8th Congressional District was specifically drawn with Latino representation in mind, and both of the members of Congress elected from the district so far have been Latino. Does it matter if the next representative from the district is Latino? Ms. Byrd.
Thank you for the question. You know, I have already represented Latino families as a state representative, and it was a joy. I've loved all of my constituents, and now, since I have been in this race, making constituent outreach has been a core priority for me. Since I got into the race, I've made over 170 stops throughout the district, making sure I am meeting voters where they are at in all corners of Colorado's 8th. To learn what they care about, what they want to see in their next representative. And truly, the response we are getting is excitement, because people are so happy to know that they have a choice and that someone's coming into their communities who cares about them and wants to know what they think. And all of that information I am bringing with me to Congress so that I will be ready on day one to be the fighter that every person in Colorado's 8th deserves.
Ms. Byrd, thank you. Mr. Routinel, is it important that the next representative from this heavily Latino district is Latino?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, Donald Trump is gutting the Voting Rights Act with his Supreme Court across the country and stripping Latinos and Black people of representation and voting rights. We need to make sure that we put up the best person and someone who understands the cultures, the struggles, the dreams of the people of this district. I'm the son of a single mom who immigrated to America in search of that American dream. We worked hard every single day for this country, but we still struggled. I remember being 10 years old when I was filling out those food stamp and Medicaid forms, the same programs that Gabe Evans and Donald Trump are now destroying to give tax breaks to their billionaire buddies. We need someone who understands the struggles. And unfortunately, Shannon Byrd was the only Democrat to vote with Republicans to allow ICE to raid our schools and hospitals, to allow ICE to cooperate with police. We need someone who understands the struggle of Latino communities across this district. That's what I will do when I'm in Congress.
Ms. Byrd, if you could take a moment to explain your vote on that topic.
Yes, I'd like to respond to that. Thank you. I have been very clear that I have never voted to allow ICE into public schools or hospitals. I don't support it. I have already co-sponsored and passed legislation to ban ICE from courthouses. The bill before us had some challenges in committee, and I'll get to that in a second, but I want to be very clear about where I stand with ICE. What we are seeing across American communities with masked, untrained agents terrorizing people is dangerous and un-American. And at a federal level, we need a complete overhaul of ICE. That means banning face masks, mandating body cameras, and banning ICE enforcement activity out of our public schools, our hospitals, courthouses, and places of worship. It also means making sure that we're holding ICE agents fully accountable when they break the law. Coming to the vote that Manny is talking about, and he brings this up a lot. I've been very clear on the record, this was a committee vote meant to make the bill better. There was a provision in that bill that would have fined normal people, frontline workers, personally up to $50,000 anytime their boss broke the law. I didn't think that was right. So that is where I was at. But I've been very clear that was the only problem I had with the bill. Unfortunately, due to a family medical emergency, I wasn't able to be on the House floor for final passage. But I would have voted for that because we can't allow the perfect to be the enemy of the good.
Ms. Byrd, could I clarify, though?
I have one other thing to add.
You said that your vote against this bill to curb excesses by ICE was a vote to fix the bill. But there is no such option when you're voting, right? You're voting up or down on bills,
right.
And you voted down, and you were the only Democrat to do so. The reason that that bill didn't die on that day is because there weren't enough other Republicans or Democrats to join you in killing it. Here's my question. If that vote had been close that day, would you have voted to advance the bill?
Yes, of course,
okay.
I would have.
And we'll talk more about immigration in just a moment.
Okay.
Next, let's talk about affordability. Right? This has proven difficult for politicians at every level, local, state, and national, to tackle in a meaningful way in the last year. What is within Congress's power to do to make Colorado a more affordable place to live? Mr. Runo.
Yeah, I'm proud to have co-sponsored over 400 laws that have become the law of the land here in Colorado to take on Donald Trump and lower costs for working families. Right now, Donald Trump is doing everything in his power to make life as difficult as possible for working people. And I've been going to these in-person town halls, and people tell me that they feel like they've been lied to. They said Donald Trump is going to go after grocery costs and gas prices, and instead he has started trade wars with tariffs and started a forever war in Iran without any plans, raising prices across the board. We need to bring a war powers resolution to bring an end to this forever war in Iran. I also think we need to make sure that we're addressing the health care cuts that Donald Trump and Gabe Evans just inflicted on the people of this district. You know, if you go on the Colorado Health website, you'll see that a family of four is now going to be paying, instead of $500 a month in 2025, they'll be paying $2,000 a month in 2026. We need to make sure that we elect representatives that understand the struggles of working families. A lot of times you hear politicians talk about the affordability crisis like their consultants just gave them a memo. For me, this is deeply personal.
Mr. Rutenell, thank you. Ms. Byrd, what is within Congress's power to do to make the cost of living more bearable in Colorado?
Yes, the first thing that we need to do is restore the health insurance affordability tax credits so that people can afford to purchase their health insurance on the exchange. And absent the renewal of those tax credits, all health insurance payers in this state are likely to see an up to 200% spike in the prices of their health insurance. That's bad for everybody. So that's something that Congress can immediately do. Beyond that, we need to reverse the cuts that Donald Trump and Gabe Evans made to Medicaid. And unfortunately, we now have two people in this race who have voted to cut Medicaid, Manny Rutenell, as well as Gabe Evans. But those cuts need to be reversed so that we can make sure people get the coverage that they need. Additionally, we need to restore the tax credits and grants that the federal government has owed to the people here in Colorado that we've been using to scale up renewable energy. There was money that we were planning to receive from the federal government to help us renew and restore our grid and also scale up renewable sources to help bring down people's cost of energy.
And I just want to note that Donald Trump and Gabe Evans cut Medicaid. I worked with my Democratic colleagues in the House to save the program. What happened was that Shannon Byrd abandoned her constituents and quit the legislature instead of fighting back, which is good news and bad news, because good news means that she can't keep voting with ICE in the state legislature. Bad news is now she's trying to do that in Congress.
So, Ms. Byrd, I want to ask you about that, and you'll have a moment to respond here. So
okay.
Your campaign is running an ad that, again, as you just did here, said that Mr. Rutenell cut Medicaid, and that was actually his vote for the state budget, which was the Democrats' plan to balance the state budget this year. Right? This is going to be a tough vote in a budget-cutting year. You didn't have to take that vote, of course, because you left to focus on your campaign for Congress. So a short answer, please. Mm-hmm. If you had been there, would you have voted in the same way that Mr. Rutenell did for that state budget?
No, I would have not voted to cut Medicaid.
You would have been one of two Democrats. The only other Democrat was the most conservative Democrat in the state legislature to vote against that Democrat plan to balance the budget. So another short answer, please. As the former vice chair, of the Joint Budget Committee that writes the budget, mm-hmm. has in past years, the mess that the state of Colorado is in today, mm-hmm. is any of that attributable to the decisions that you made?
No. Colorado has a unique tax code, but I want to come back to something. With respect to balancing the state budget, what should have happened is if a no vote, we should not have cut Medicaid. I would not have done that. And what we should have done is, at the very least, tapped additional funds from our state's rainy day fund. We can do that. That's a fund that is sitting now at a balance of just over $2 billion. And anyone who has spent any time in Colorado's 8th Congressional District knows that 52% of Colorado's 8th kids uses Medicaid to see the doctor. One in four families depends upon Medicaid. So no, we needed to tap that reserve and not take it all the way down.
Democrats did tap it. You would have taken even more money out of the state's reserves.
Yes.
And do you think that would be a wise decision in the current economy?
I do. I believe that we could have taken the reserve down to 10%. Our previous statutory requirement was 15%. To take it down to 10% would still have left us with a reserve that was two times the amount of reserve we had when the state entered the Great Recession. So that would be a cushion, and it would preserve, give Colorado and our voters one more year to figure this out, because Medicaid and access to health care is a life and death decision for people. And I want to say, Manny Rootnell continues to bring this up because he wants to distract from his own record that he can't defend. He's cut Medicaid, he's voted to cut or to actually continue taxing overtime, and he wants to deflect that sort of critical look at his record to me, when they should be also reviewing Manny's record.
A short answer, Mr. Rootnell, why was that the right vote to take to make those cuts to Medicaid, to allow overtime to continue to be taxed at the state level? Why was that the right vote?
Look, saving Medicaid was deeply personal for me. I started being on Medicaid at around 10 years old. I know what it means when Donald Trump and Gabe Evans cut Medicaid and the consequences to working families like the ones that I grew up with. We need to make sure that we completely bring back the Medicaid cuts that Donald Trump and Gabe Evans have inflicted on the working people of this district. And what I did was work with my Democratic colleagues. What Shannon Byrd is saying is that she would have voted to completely defund Medicaid, K through 12, home health care, all of these programs that the budget needed to fund in this moment. We need fighters in this moment. And when the time came to fight back, Shannon Byrd quit the legislature to focus on her personal ambitions.
That is completely false. I will begin by saying I didn't think it was right to take a taxpayer-funded salary while I knew I would be running for the country's most competitive congressional seat. So I do want to say that. I also know what it takes to be an effective legislator and to pass real policy. That's demonstrated by the fact that I was named the state's most effective lawmaker.
Could I ask for a clarification?
Very proud of
there.
That.
You've said a couple of times in this forum and in others that you didn't feel it was right to take a taxpayer salary while running for a very competitive seat.
Yes.
If you are elected in November, you will be getting a taxpayer salary, and you will be running again in 2 years for perhaps America's most competitive seat. Will you take the taxpayer salary then?
That's very different, Kyle. In a situation like that, being part of a campaign is connecting with your voters and being out in your district full time. That's the work of a good campaign, and that's how a person builds a relationship, not only to win the seat.
How
in the
is
first
it? How
instance.
Is it different? I'm not sure that I grasped that. How is it different?
Oh, it's completely different, because you are in the role, and you, while you're doing your work, you are out there meeting with voters, which is what you should be doing as part of your job anyway. Hearing from voters, hosting town halls, community coffees, as I've done as a state legislator. I'll note, during my time as a state representative, I hosted over 90 community coffees and town hall events, and that's the work of a sitting representative.
Thank you. I wanted to make sure that we put a bow on that topic, because I had a feeling that you wanted to discuss it at length, but I would like to return to the topic of affordability, because it goes into a lot of different areas. Mr. Rootnell, a brief answer, if you would. On one aspect of affordability, earlier in this campaign, you said that you support canceling student debt. Is that still your position?
I believe in canceling the debt associated with public service. Right now, folks are working hard for our public, and they deserve the public service loan forgiveness relief that they should feel entitled to.
So earlier in this campaign, you said that you supported canceling student debt without qualification or reserve, even when you were given the opportunity to qualify what you were talking about. You then told the Colorado Sun that for folks in public interest jobs, you supported a reliable payment plan. Now you're talking about debt forgiveness for folks in public service jobs. This feels like three different positions within the course of a campaign.
No, I've been very consistent on this. I believe in a public service loan forgiveness that provides a cancellation of debt upon the completion of a timeline of work on behalf of the public. That's the sort of important work that we need to do to make sure that we encourage folks to go to college, get that great education, and be able to contribute to society.
So you would acknowledge that there's a huge gulf between canceling all student debt and then what you're proposing. Is there a reason why you didn't qualify your answer to the Working Families Party when they gave you the opportunity to? You simply said cancel student debt?
Well, what I said was, it was a yes or no question.
Yep, which you then had the opportunity to clarify, and you did for some other answers, but you didn't on this one, so I'm just curious why.
Yeah, I was given a very limited amount of time, and what I used on that time is to be able to talk to people about many other important issues. You know, when it comes to canceling student debt, I believe that we need a public service loan forgiveness program that provides relief to our public sector workers.
We'd like to hear from you, each of you now, on the aspect of affordability as it relates to health care. Ms. Bird, you talked about the health insurance affordability tax credits. You talked about restoring Medicaid cuts. You've also talked about restoring Medicaid cuts. Beyond that, how do we make health insurance more affordable for people in Colorado, Ms. Bird?
It begins by making sure everybody is covered, and that's part of why those cuts to Medicaid through the budget that was passed need to be reversed. Beyond that, though, long-term, we need a public option, which I support. That will offer an opportunity for another competitive source for health insurance. Public option is key, and also long-term, we need to move our country away from a fee-for-service model of paying for health care. It's very expensive, and that type of fee-for-service model doesn't put the healthcare system looking at the overall health of a person. Instead, compensation to providers, whether doctors, hospitals, should incentivize healthy outcomes. That needs to happen, and it's something I'm very excited to work on as a member of Congress.
Ms. Bird, thank you. Mr. Rudin, other than what you've already talked about in terms of restoring cuts to Medicaid, how do we make healthcare more affordable in America?
Yeah, you know, the issue of health care is deeply important to the people of this district. About a third of folks are on Medicaid. If you go on the Colorado Health website, you'll see that health insurance rates are doubling, tripling, quadrupling for families that can barely make ends meet as it is. I think there's many different things that we can do to cut the cost of health care. One is, you know, we can allow Medicare to be able to negotiate prescription drug prices, which will not just lower the cost for the Medicare recipients, but also save hundreds of billions of dollars in taxpayer funds. I think we also need to make sure that we push forward for a public option that allows for a public entity to compete alongside private insurance companies. I also think that we need to have caps on prescription drug costs. You know, that's something that we do here in Colorado. I think we can extend that. I think that folks who are on insulin, for instance, shouldn't be having to decide between putting food on the table or paying for important medical needs. And so that's the sort of three policies that I think we can be pushing for.
Mr. Root, now one thing that I didn't hear you mention on healthcare is a universal single-payer health system. You said earlier in this campaign that you support a universal single-payer health system. Is that still your position?
Look, I grew up on Medicaid, and so I know how important it is for us to be able to have affordable, accessible healthcare. I think that we need to be pushing for a public option, and we also need to be restoring the cuts to Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act that Donald Trump has inflicted on the people of this district.
With respect, sir, that's a lot of words, and none of them are an answer to the question. You said earlier in this campaign you support a universal single-payer health system. Is that still your position?
We need to be looking for actionable solutions, and right now, Donald Trump and Gabe Evans have cut Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act. We need someone who will fight back, restore those programs, as well as push for programs that have...
Mr. Rutenell, with respect, what should voters discern from the fact that you won't answer a question about your own position earlier in this campaign? You said you supported universal single payer. Do you still support that?
You know, like I said, we need actionable solutions to the issues that Donald Trump and Gabe Evans
have. If you're going to refuse to answer, we'll move on. On energy. Energy cost is another aspect of affordability, and energy production is a significant source of jobs in the district. It's also a significant source of pollution in the district. A short answer from each of you to begin on this topic. Can and should Congress be involved in trying to lower gas prices? Mr. Rutenow, a short answer, if you would, please.
Sure. Right now, Donald Trump is engaging in a forever war with Iran without any plans. Every time you pass by a gas station, you see prices go up and up and up. I think they're up now about 50%. It is unconscionable for so many families that can barely make ends meet. We need to bring a war powers resolution to put an end to these forever wars so that we can bring down gas
Thank you.
Prices.
A short answer, Ms. Bird.
Yes, the war in Iran has caused people's gas prices to go up by 52%. In some places, people are paying over $4.78 a gallon, and that's That's killing too many families. It's putting undue pressure on their budgets. We need a war powers resolution and to bring our troops home.
You're both in agreement on that. Mr. Rutenell, 7 years ago as a student at Yale, you got arrested for storming a football field during a game for a protest against oil and gas. You are now running to represent a district that is a big oil and gas producer. Question, do you still believe, as your group said that day, hey, hey, ho, ho, fossil fuels have got to go?
You know, for that protest, I was a legal observer. I was making sure that folks were safe in those moments. I think what we need is an all-of-the-above energy system that prioritizes safe, affordable energy, especially in a moment like now when Donald Trump has sent us into this forever war, raised gas prices across the roof. I mean, we need folks to stand up to the Trump administration, bring that war powers resolution, bring down costs.
You've said that already. I'd like to get some new material for voters who are listening tonight. Do you still believe that fossil fuels have got to go?
No, I think we need to make sure that we have an all-of-the-above energy system.
Thank you, Mr. Rutenell. Following your arrest, you said that climate change is, quote, the biggest issue of our time. Do you still believe that?
I believe that climate change is a very important issue, and I think we need to make sure that we have an energy system that is safe and affordable.
Fair enough. You just used the term all-of-the-above energy policy. Ms. Bird, I've heard you use the same term. Politicians can use that term to mean anything from, I support the Green New Deal, but I don't really want to say so, to I'm owned by the oil and gas industry, but I don't really want to say so. So what does that term mean to you, all-of-above energy production? What does it mean to you? What would it mean to the district? Ms. Bird.
I think it's a recognition that natural gas plays a key role in making sure people's utility bills are affordable. That along with renewables. And natural gas becomes of particular importance as we're working to scale up renewables. But make no doubt about it, people's utility bills are going up, and we need options. We need to drive affordability. I recently spoke with a voter in my district, a woman who lived solely on Social Security, and she shared with me that for every dollar her utility bill would go up, that would be a copay she couldn't afford to cover. And that can't be. We need to be sensitive to this and making sure that energy affordability is top of mind. So definitely making sure we have an all-of-the-above strategy, allowing for natural gas while we are scaling up renewables, I think is critical and will help a lot of people afford their bills.
Thank you, Ms. Bird. Mr. Rutenell, what does that term mean to you, and what would it mean to your constituents in the 8th, all-of-the-above energy strategy?
Sure. It means a system of energy that includes both natural gas and renewables. And I think it's important to be able to do that, to be able to keep prices low and keep the good-paying jobs here in the 8th Congressional District. I'll add that, you know, I remember going to my shifts at McDonald's, and I would always turn off my car at red lights so that I can save gas money. For me, this isn't theoretical. This is real lived experience. I know the struggles of working people across this district. I know how much they're struggling right now when gas price goes up 50%. This is a really tough time for so many people across this district. We need fighters who understand their issues, their struggles, their dreams and aspirations. That's what I've always done. That's what I'll do when I'm in Congress.
I appreciate you both going a little short on that when you concluded your thoughts. It gives us more time to talk about other things. A short answer from each of you, please. Is the Suncor refinery, Colorado's largest polluter, is it a good neighbor to the Coloradans who live near it in the district, Mr. Rutenell?
You know, I've been able to pass legislation to hold Suncor accountable and make sure that we have regulators both on site and within CDPHE, the public health agency. We need to make sure that we hold corporate polluters accountable when they continuously harm our communities. Our community shouldn't have to experience asthma attacks and nosebleeds. They should feel safe in their own homes, and we need to hold corporate polluters accountable.
Is Suncor a good neighbor?
You know, I think that they've often been a very bad neighbor, and I think that's the result of lax policies, and we need to make sure that we bring stronger policies, especially with the rollbacks at the EPA.
Ms. Bird, is Suncor a good neighbor?
Suncor's operations have hurt a lot of people in the area. The people who live near and around Suncor have legitimate concerns about clean air. And making sure that Suncor is held to a high standard of operation is of critical importance. This is something I worked on as a state representative, making sure that I was part of passing some of the strictest air quality laws in the country. And as chair and vice chair of our state's budget committee, making sure that we were funding enforcement and monitoring of emissions at Suncor. In Congress, I plan to have Colorado's back as we enforce our laws and make sure that we're investing again in the EPA so that they restore their enforcement capacities as well.
Ms. Byrd, thank you. A short answer on this as well, please. Nuclear accounts for about one-fifth of America's electricity production. Colorado does not have an operating nuclear reactor. Would you be open to one in the 8th Congressional District, Ms. Byrd?
That would depend upon how the constituents of the district felt, but it's something that I think should be looked at if nuclear can be done safely. If the technology is there, then that is something we should consider.
Do you believe it is safe and the technology is there today?
I am not a scientist and not an expert, and that would be my job as a member of Congress to go and make sure I was consulting with all of the experts. But above all else, this energy source has to be safe before we bring it into our state or into the district.
Mr. Rudinell, the idea of a nuclear reactor in the 8th.
You know, I believe in all of the above energy system, like I've said before, and I think we need to make sure that any energy that's in the 8th Congressional District is safe and affordable and provides good paying jobs. I think there is room to do that with nuclear energy so long as there are appropriate safeguards in place.
A short answer here. Mr. Rudinell, you said that you would work with the so-called Squad, which is a group of some of the most progressive Democrats in Congress, to advance the Green New Deal. Is that still your position, that you would work to advance the Green New Deal?
You know, the question there, when it was phrased to me, was the key components of a plan. And I think that any good energy plan will focus on bringing about good jobs and safe, affordable energy. That's what I've always pushed for. Like I said, when I went to those McDonald's shifts, I would always turn off my car because otherwise I wouldn't be able to pay for the gas that I needed to be able to make it my way.
Core component of the Green New Deal is a phase out of fossil fuels. Do you support that aspect of the Green New Deal?
I believe in an all-of-the-above energy system to make sure that we have
Ms.
safe, Byrd, affordable energy.
Ms. Byrd, would you seek to advance the core components of the Green New Deal in Congress, as you understand it?
My principal focus is making sure that people can afford their energy bills and that we are working with our energy sources to scale up renewables so that we have sustainable, safe sources of energy. That's my goal. It's a key to affordability and making sure we have a sustainable way.
Sounds like a
good
no.
To the environment as well.
This one is a yes or no. Ms. Byrd, do you support a ban on fracking?
No, I don't. I believe that natural
Rudinell,
gas has a role.
Thank you. Mr. Rudinell, do you support a ban on fracking?
I believe in an all-of-the-above energy system.
This is a yes or no question,
no.
Sir. You do not support a ban on fracking. Okay. Earlier in this campaign, you said that you did support a ban on fracking. Why did you change your position?
You know, like I've said before, Donald Trump has sent us into a forever war with Iran without any plans and raised gas prices across the board. Working people in this district are struggling. We need to make sure that we provide a safe, affordable energy system.
Could you explain the connection, draw the through line for us? Because you were opposed to fracking earlier in the campaign, now you're supportive, something war in Iran. Could you thread it through for me?
Right, so Donald Trump starts a forever war in Iran, gas prices are through the roof, we need an energy system that is responsive to that and make sure that we have safe, affordable energy for the people in this district.
So if the war on Iran ends, will you go back to your previous position in this campaign in opposition to fracking?
I believe in all of the above energy system.
It's a very simple question. If the war on Iran ends, will you go back to your previous position?
Like I said, I believe in an all of the above energy
system. If you're not going to answer, we can move on. Let's talk about money in politics. Ms. Byrd, you founded the Opportunity Caucus. That was a group of moderate Democrats in the state legislature. You wrote in an op-ed announcing the caucus, quote, "All hardworking Coloradans need champions who prioritize solutions over sound bites." I should say, to be more accurate, the head of a dark money group called One Main Street wrote that op-ed, gave it to you, and told you to put your name on it, and you did. That was the same dark money group that bankrolled your Opportunity Caucus. Was this really about bipartisan consensus, or was this just pay-to-play politics that was dressed up as consensus?
Kyle, I just reject your framing of the question. So this was a group that was founded to make sure that Democrats were being intentional about focusing on affordability and opportunity. So the group wasn't, during my time with that group, there was no fundraising, no funding of the group. This is essentially like any number of other caucuses that we have in the state legislature that bring legislators together to be intentional and focus on different substantive topics. That's what the Opportunity Caucus was, founded to make sure we are focused on those issues. And you talked about an op-ed.
Yes, there the one written by Andrew Short, whose group then funded your operation. So he wrote the op-ed, told you to put your name on it. You did. Then he gave your group money.
We collaborated on a draft of an op-ed. Mm-hmm. So again, I disagree with your characterization of this, but the op-ed clearly laid out where we stand. Funding for that caucus is something that happened after I was no longer part of the caucus or part of leadership.
Are you comfortable with the fact that it became a way for oil and gas companies and other conservative interests to funnel money to centrist Dems?
I believe that transparency is key, and all caucuses should be disclosing their donors and making sure
everybody
knows.
Again, the question is, are you comfortable with the fact that the Opportunity Caucus, which you created, has become a way for conservative interests, including oil and gas companies, to funnel money to centrist Dems?
I'm not aware of their funding sources because I didn't fundraise for them. So the facts that you're presenting are not anything
that I
know
reported,
about.
But they were news to you.
Well, they are because I didn't fundraise for this group.
All right, let's talk about immigration policy. One of you is going to run against Republican Congressman Gabe Evans, who has been a staunch supporter of President Trump's mass deportations. A few short answer questions, and each of you will have a full minute to flesh out your policies on immigration more broadly. In a word or two, should ICE be reformed or abolished? Mr. Rutnell.
We need to overhaul ICE immediately.
Ms. Byrd.
Overhaul ICE completely.
Did you support the effort by Senate Democrats, including Colorado's Michael Bennett and John Hickenlooper, to withhold some DHS funding to try and force changes to immigration enforcement? Did you support that maneuver that partially shut down the government? Ms. Byrd.
I do.
Mr. Rutnell.
Yes.
Does President Trump deserve credit for the significant drop-off in illegal border crossings? Mr. Rutnell.
No.
Why is that?
I think that what he's doing right now shouldn't receive any credit at all. He is terrorizing Latino immigrants across this country, setting up horrific conditions. We need to make sure that we have an immigration system that is comprehensive with a pathway to citizenship.
And to clarify, who does deserve credit for the significant drop-off in illegal border crossings?
This is something that I need to explore further, but I think
Ms. Byrd, does President Trump deserve credit for the significant drop-off in illegal border crossings?
I think Donald Trump has destroyed immigration in our country, and that's a travesty to all of us. It hurts all of our communities. It hurts families who are living here right now. So I don't know if I would use the word credit, but I believe that his immigration policy is cruel, and he is responsible for pushing a very cruel agenda.
I'd like to hear from each of you, full minute now, to discuss your views on immigration. Please answer the central question, though. Who should be deported from this country, and who should have the opportunity to stay? Mr. Rutnell.
You know, the issue of immigration is deeply personal for me. I'm the son of a single immigrant mom who came to America in search of that American dream. And we worked hard every single day for this country, like so many immigrants do. I think we need to make sure that we have a pathway to citizenship for dreamers and so many of the folks that have been here for so long, working hard to provide for their families, provide for their communities. I think ICE should be focused, or any sort of immigration enforcement, shouldn't be focused on grandmas. They should be focused on gangsters. They should be focused on violent criminals. We should be having an immigration system that welcomes those people, the dreamers, the long immigrants here, to have that pathway to citizenship so that they can continue to contribute to our communities.
To clarify, should somebody who entered the country illegally have a path to stay here legally?
You know, there's so many different ways that folks have made their way here, many on asylum claims, many have, different pathways.
Question is just about the people who entered illegally. Should they have a path to stay legally?
You know, I think there's a lot of different components to that. If someone has been here, worked hard, if they've been brought by their family as dreamers, they should have a pathway to citizenship. And on the immigration issue, you know, this one is pretty clear cut that Shannon Byrd has consistently sided with ICE to allow ICE to raid our schools and hospitals, allow ICE
to
walk.
We covered that ground earlier. I think what I heard from you on this is that length of stay and age at entry would matter to you in looking in those cases. Is that
fair
to say?
Those are important components, absolutely.
Okay, all right, very good. Ms. Byrd, same question to you. How we reform immigration policy more broadly, but with that central question of who should be deported, who should have a chance to stay?
Yes. First, I'll respond here, though. For viewers at home, I want to be very clear. I have never sided with ICE. I've never voted that way. Manny knows that. And he continues to bring this up to deflect from his own record of accepting over $100,000 in campaign contributions from employees of an ICE contractor. So
could I interject here? You can have your full time.
Yes.
I've heard you say this before, that he's taking contributions from employees of an ICE contractor. Meaning what?
I believe that when you are taking so much money from one group exclusively, that perhaps that group would want something from the new elected member of Congress.
Exclusively feels like a little bit of an overbroad statement, given that this man has raised a mountain of money. You're not saying that that all came from ICE contractor employees.
Over $100,000 of it did.
Okay, and you believe that this is somehow influencing him to be pro-ICE in some way? It just doesn't square. I'm trying to figure out what you're accusing him of.
I believe that dark money in politics and making sure that our donors reflect our values and show that our vote can't be bought, I think that's important. And when I see somebody taking that much money from one specific employer, I think that sends off alarm bells, and we should all be asking who is attempting to support a candidate to get into Congress. What is it that they're going to be asking for?
In fact, we were just talking about dark money in politics a moment ago with you. Please take your full time again on the immigration question, because I interrupted you. Who should be deported? Who should be allowed to remain in the country?
So we need complete immigration reform. And what Donald Trump and Gabe Evans promised us with their policy is that people who were here to hurt Americans would be targeted with immigration enforcement activity. And that's where ICE needs to prioritize its enforcement. If you are here to hurt American citizens, you shouldn't be here. So beyond that, we need a secure border to make sure that we don't have human trafficking, illegal trafficking of drugs or weapons into this country. This isn't theoretical. I recently spoke with a Westminster dad who lost his son to an overdose of drugs that had been laced with illegally trafficked fentanyl. So it's a scary time for a lot of families. But this needs to be done. There should be a pathway to citizenship for people who've come to our country who want to work and contribute, to be part of our communities. I want to find a way for those people to become Americans as well. Beyond that, we need to also reform our asylum system so that people can get fair, fast, and final hearings more quickly. And we need to pass the DREAM Act and protect DACA recipients.
Ms. Byrd, thank you. You know, I have a moment to ask one another a question. Each of you will have 1 minute to respond. Ms. Byrd, first your question for Mr. Rudin.
Great. So, Manny, I have a question for you. It has been reported recently that you have been taking significant positions on issues that are very relevant in this campaign, on like healthcare, fracking, student debt, and now Medicaid. So your position changes depending upon which room you are in. You tell one group of people one thing, and you tell another group of people another thing. I'm wondering how you square that, and how can voters trust you when we know you might be saying different things to different people depending on who your audience is? Help us understand. How can voters trust you?
You know, I've always been consistent in my fight for working people. This is not theoretical for me. This is deeply personal. We need folks who understand the struggles of working families. That's why I'm endorsed by the largest unions in the state, including teachers, service workers, farm workers, food workers, folks who understand the struggle of living paycheck to paycheck. It's the same struggle that I've had to live with. I remember when my mom came into the house when I was a young teen. She opened up an envelope, she read what was inside, ran to her room and started crying because she just found out that the bank was foreclosing on our home. We need actionable results. We need folks who have the track record to stand up to Donald Trump and lower costs for working families. I'm very proud of the 400 laws that I've co-sponsored to lower costs and fight back against the Trump administration. That is what I will always do when I'm in Congress.
Mr. Rudinell, thank you. Your opportunity to ask Ms. Byrd a question.
Well, Shannon, I'm sure you know that the Voting Rights Act has been gutted. And as a result of that, Latino people across this country are losing voting rights, and so are the elected officials that represent them. They're being stripped of their seats through redistricting. Why is it that in a state like this, a state of 25% Latinos, in a district like this, 40% of the folks in this district are Latino, why is it that you don't think that Colorado deserves a Latino member of Congress?
I am pleased to say that I have already represented Latino families and have been honored and privileged to do so as in my time as a state representative. And that is why I have made outreach to Latino communities and every voter in this district a key priority, because at the end of the day, this district needs a representative who is effective and doesn't vote to cut Medicaid and doesn't vote to tax their family's overtime pay, but somebody who actually shows up and delivers. And this is the work I am excited to do for every member of Colorado's 8th Congressional District. We need a fighter, somebody who actually knows how to deliver real results. My track record in Colorado's capital demonstrates I know how to do just that, from funding our public schools to standing up to big health insurance companies to make sure we're bringing down the cost of healthcare and to expanding Colorado's investment in affordable housing. This is a track record that has benefited everybody in Colorado's 8th and one I intend to bring to Congress.
Ms. Bird, thank you. In 2024 in the state legislature, Mr. Rutenell sponsored a ban on so-called assault weapons in Colorado. Ms. Bird, you and a handful of other Democrats joined with Republicans to vote against it, and the bill eventually died. I would like each of you to discuss your vote on that particular bill and how it was informed by your views on gun control and the Second Amendment. Let's try not to spend a full minute on this. Focus on that vote there. Ms. Bird.
Sure. So I'm proud to say that I have been named a Moms Demand Action Gun Sense candidate in every one of my races, including this race here today. So I take gun safety very seriously, especially as a mom of two kids who grew up in a time being afraid that they could be the victims of the next mass shooting in a public school. So this is something I take very seriously. The assault weapons ban bill that came before us, I did my research on that bill, and every law enforcement officer, chief of police that I spoke to said that that bill could not be enforced. And then beyond that, the bill sponsor himself admitted on the House floor that the bill was unconstitutional. The bill was such a bad piece of legislation that its Senate sponsors actually killed the bill themselves when it moved over to the other chamber.
Mr. Rutenell, that was your bill.
I'm sorry?
Do you have anything to say about it? She says it was a bad bill. She says it was unconstitutional. You supported that so-called ban, the ban on so-called assault weapons in Colorado. Why was that the right thing to do?
Well, gun safety is extremely important. We need to get these dangerous guns off of our streets. Mass shootings have a terrible history here in Colorado. And when that opportunity came to ban assault weapons, I and nearly all Democrats voted to ban assault weapons. Like you said, Shannon Bird was one of just a handful of Democrats to vote with Republicans. She's got a long history of voting with Republicans to kill important Democrat legislation to protect our families. And this is another example of that.
Short answer from each of you, please. Would you support a federal ban on so-called assault weapons? Ms. Bird?
Yes, if that bill comes before me and is enforceable and constitutional, yes.
Mr. Rutenell.
Yes.
Mr. Rutenell, the most recent census of agriculture counted more than 2,000 farms in the 8th Congressional District, found that 80% of their sales come from livestock, poultry, and products. You worked for years in vegan activism, so I've got a few short answer questions and then we'll get into the policy implications. I've never asked somebody this in a debate, but you worked in the activism sphere, so I'm curious, are you still a vegan?
I'm not a vegan.
Why are you not a vegan anymore?
Because I think that it's important for me to be able to enjoy the delicious products that Colorado ranchers make.
Welcome to the world of meat. You told the Yale Big Ag and Antitrust Conference in 2021 that, quote, the factory farming of animals is one of the largest sources of suffering on the planet. You also said, quote, animal agriculture is a horrific, exploitative industry. Feel free to take a minute on this. Do you still believe what you said? And how will that affect the way that you lead?
Look, farmers and ranchers are my friends. I've been honored to be supported by United Farm Workers, United Food and Commercial Workers, which represents the meat packers over at JBS in Greeley. I will always fight for our ranchers and farmers. And right now, Donald Trump and Gabe Evans are creating terrible conditions for them with their chaotic and corrupt tariff policies.
Would you mind answering the question, though, of whether you still believe that animal agriculture is a horrific, exploitative industry?
Colorado ranchers and farmers are the envy of the world. They have the best practices, the most sustainable practice. They produce the best product. I will always fight for them.
So voters are left to try and discern whether you still believe that and you won't tell them, or whether you've changed your mind. There's certainly nothing wrong with changing your mind, and if you have, I'd like to ask you why. But I'll ask you again, do you still believe that animal agriculture is a horrific, exploitative industry?
No, I think that Colorado ranchers and farmers are the envy of the world. They produce the best product, not just across the country, but across the world.
Okay, Ms. Bird, I have a feeling I know the answer to this, but I won't leave anybody at home hanging. Do you believe that animal agriculture is a horrific, exploitative industry?
I do not, and I'm very proud to have been endorsed by the political arm of the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union, the Colorado Corn Growers Association. I am excited to go fight for our farmers in Congress for Colorado's 8th.
Congressman Evans spends a whole lot of his time attacking Democrats at the state level in Colorado. And I could see him trying to make the race against either of you less about what he and President Trump are doing in Washington and more about what elected Democrats are doing in Colorado. So, if he says that your decisions have made Colorado less affordable, less safe, less open to business, less friendly to energy production, how will you answer that charge in the general election, Ms. Byrd?
Oh, I'm happy to have that conversation with Gabe Evans. Every vote he has taken has been a vote to hurt the people in Colorado's 8th Congressional District. He has taken votes to rip health care away from tens of thousands of people.
He wants to talk about your votes. Talk about your votes. You know that that is the criticism of Democrats in Colorado. Less safe, less affordable, less friendly to business. How will you answer that charge?
The affordability crisis can be laid right at the feet of Donald Trump and Gabe Evans through the tariff policy, creating retaliatory trade wars in our export markets, hurting businesses for that reason, causing costs to go sky high with the Trump administration's erratic behavior, causing interest rate markets to be incredibly volatile. That hurts affordability for everyone. People can't buy new homes now because mortgage interest rates keep going up. People can't make a plan. So when we look at housing affordability and we look at the cost of energy, and again, I'll bring back those tax credits and grants that we were expecting to help scale up renewable energy, these are all programs that Donald Trump cut that at the end of the day are going to make our utility bills more expensive.
Ms. Byrd, thank you. Mr. Runa, how will you answer if Gabe Evans tries to make this race a referendum on what Democrats have done to Colorado? You know what it sounds like, less safe, less affordable, less friendly to business. How do you answer for your votes and what collectively Democrats have done?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised if Gabe Evans tries to distract voters from his horrific policies. We need fighters, and I'm proud to have co-sponsored over 400 laws that have become the law of the land here in Colorado to stand up to Donald Trump and lower costs on housing and health care, making our streets safer by taking the dangerous weapons that you just mentioned off of our streets. And of course, we need to make sure that we focus on this Iran war that is a forever war that is making gas prices skyrocket and making prices across the board go up, as well as the chaotic and corrupt policies of the tariffs that Donald Trump is using to enrich himself and his family members. And of course, one of the biggest ticket items is the cuts to Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act to the tune of $1 trillion, which means that a family of four is going from $500 a month to $2,000 a month. We need people who understand the struggles of working families, and I've been able to deliver for them in the Colorado State House, and I will do that in Congress.
Briefly to each of you, in your time in the State House, are there any votes that you seriously regret, that you look back on and say, I got that one wrong? Mr. Runa.
I don't think so. I can't think of one right now.
Okay, Ms. Byrd.
I don't think that there's a vote that I got wrong, but I wish I had been there for final passage of Senate Bill 276 to be able to cast that vote.
That is the bill that would have put restrictions on
yes.
ICE that you voted against in committee, said that you
yes.
would have voted
I wish I had been there for that day, yes.
If it was on the floor. Let's talk about the regulation of AI and data centers, right? Two separate issues, but related. Both of you recently kind of hedged on whether there should be a national moratorium on new data center construction until federal regulations for AI are established. How would you like to see AI and data center development regulated, specifically regulated at the state level or at the federal level? Ms. Byrd.
Well, data centers are already in our communities. And what needs to happen with if there is a growth in data centers, more of them, that needs to happen with community and local consent. Community members have to be able to weigh in on this and determine whether they're allowed and under what circumstances. Beyond that, though, they need to be responsible for building out their own energy infrastructure so that as they draw energy off of the grid, they're not causing residential ratepayers to subsidize their use. They also need to come with their own water supply, which is critically important, particularly in a state like Colorado, where we don't have much water to go around. At a federal level, what I intend to champion is a corporate responsibility policy to make sure we have these guardrails and that data centers aren't causing people's utility bills to go up and up and jeopardizing water sources.
Ms. Byrd, thank you. Mr. Runel, the idea of AI and data center development, separate but related issues, how should they be regulated at the state and federal level?
And I'm proud to have been the lead sponsor to have introduced and passed legislation to regulate artificial intelligence. AI, of course, has the potential to bring about great benefit to society, but it also has the potential to bring about tremendous harm. So we need to make sure that we have leaders in Congress who understand these issues and these technologies to be able to appropriately regulate them. That law that I passed to protect Colorado's consumers and workers had the bipartisan support of so many of my colleagues. One person that comes to mind right now that voted against that bill was Shannon Byrd. We need leaders who will stand up to these artificial intelligence companies that are trying to jam these technologies down our throats without appropriately safeguarding us and protecting Colorado's consumers and workers. And that's what I will fight for when I'm in Congress.
Our time is short in 15 seconds, if you could respond to that.
I don't disagree that we need strict controls or controls on guardrails on AI, absolutely. But the bill that Manny Rutenelt is talking about that he passed needed so much additional work. It was so problematic that we had public schools and hospitals so worried at the Capitol that that law was going to bankrupt them. And not only did so much more work need to be done on that, the entire legislature wound up being called back into special session at a cost of over $24,000 a day to taxpayers to try to finish the work that Manny Rutenelt did not get done when he originally passed that bill.
Thank you, Ms. Byrd. A couple of short answer questions before closings. If Democrats win the House, there's going to be a push from some in your caucus to impeach President Trump. Short answer, do you think that that's a good idea, Mr. Rutenelt?
I will use every tool in my power to be able to stand up and fight back against Donald Trump.
Including impeachment.
That's right.
All right, Ms. Byrd.
I, too, will use every tool in my toolbox to hold Donald Trump accountable and to stop his cruelty. Beyond that, if there are the votes to actually convict, would impeachment be an option?
Do you support the effort by some Democrats in Colorado to redraw the state's House map for 2028, to draw out Republican seats, add Democratic seats, to counterbalance what some red states are doing? Ms. Byrd?
Colorado needs to do its part. What we've seen with Republicans nationally is an aggressive partisan gerrymander, which shows they believe they can't win in a fair election. Colorado needs to do its part, but the better answer is long-term at a federal level. We need national ban on partisan gerrymandering.
Do you support the plan to redistrict Colorado to get Dem seats?
Yes. We need to fight back against Donald Trump's gutting of the Voting Rights Act with the Supreme Court that is causing all sorts of issues in redistricting, stripping representatives of their seat in really terrible ways.
Each candidate will now make a one-minute closing statement to voters as determined before the debate on random draw. Mr. Rutenelt, you will go first.
You know, first off, I want to thank the viewers who have tuned in. This is such an important race. I'm so grateful for all of you. I'm grateful for the 1,000 volunteers that are knocking doors and making phone calls. The largest unions in the state, including teachers, service workers, farm workers. I'm grateful for the over 100 elected officials that have endorsed this campaign, including former U.S. Senator Ken Salazar, who understands that for me, this fight is deeply personal as the son of a single mom who immigrated to America in search of that American dream. Right now, we need leaders to stand up to Donald Trump and who understand the struggles of working people. And I've been proud to co-sponsor over 400 laws to stand up to Donald Trump and fight for those working people. I'm also grateful for the 65,000 individual donors that went to ManyForColorado.com and donated an average of $27. And I've never accepted a penny from corporate PACs. And unfortunately, Shannon Byrd was one of the top recipients of corporate PAC donations during her time in the legislature. We need fighters in this moment. That's what I'll do when I'm in Congress.
Mr. Rutenelt, thank you. Ms. Byrd, your closing statement.
Might I respond first?
You have a minute for your closing statement.
All right, thank you. I am so thrilled to be here today and to have the opportunity to introduce myself. Voters, you have a choice. In this primary, you have a choice. I am somebody who has shown up and delivered time and time again, from fully funding Colorado's public schools for the first time in 15 years, to standing up to big health insurance companies, to cut their red tape and get them out of the way between you and your doctor, making sure you get the care you need, to champion an expansion of Colorado's affordable housing construction, also getting our state to be a place where we're building more condominiums so that people can afford their piece of the American dream. I have delivered. This is why I have earned the endorsement of over 200 elected leaders in the district and around the state. It's why I've earned the support of 13 unions. I am now the most labor-endorsed candidate in this race and am so proud to have their support, along with other organizations like Emily's List. Please visit ShannonByrd.com. I would be honored to earn your vote.
Thank you very much. Shannon Bird, Manny Rutenell, thank you both for being here. Thank you for your respectful exchange tonight on the issues. This is the last of three primary debates on 9 News. You can see all of them on 9news.com and on the next YouTube channel. This debate in the 8th Congressional District Democratic primary and the Democratic and Republican debates for Colorado governor. For all of us at 9 News, good night.